right now what you can see from space. Satellite imagery is making the world accessible to just about anybody with a computer and an internet connection. You can now go online to see images of destroyed villages in Darfur, what looks to be a tunnel in a mountainside in Iran near a nuclear facility. And recently, researchers found what appears to be the first public images of a new type of Chinese submarine. And for you cycling fans, you can follow every twist and turn of the Tour de France using Google Earth, one of the most popular programs. So what do you see using satellite technology? We'd like to hear from you. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and join the conversation at our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. John Pike is director of globalsecurity.org, and he's a pioneer in the public use of satellite imagery. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you on the program.
Good to be here,
John. John, with Google Earth, this used to be a capacity limited to very small numbers of people in very dark rooms in Moscow and Washington, and now anybody can do it.
Well, the satellites that the military was using for a long time had remarkable capabilities, but due to the miracle of Moore's Law that's improved all of our consumer electronics, it became less and less expensive. So finally, about a decade ago, people started looking at doing it commercially. Google has populated its mosaic of the globe with some high-resolution imagery of some interesting areas, medium-resolution imagery of other areas, mm-hmm. and they continue to add new images, as we've seen recently, of this Chinese nuclear submarine.
And how does their imagery, their high-quality imagery, compare to what do we think the military is getting?
Well, there are several different ways of thinking about that. If you think about it just in terms of spatial resolution, how big the dots are. The dots in Google Earth, you're looking at a couple of 3 feet across. The best satellite imagery that the military would be using would be just a few inches across. The big differences, though, are how frequently the military can update. The military, they're going to see this morning's images this afternoon. With Google Earth, some of these images have been in there quite some time. With the military imagery, you can measure it very precisely, and you can also get multiple images. You can do change extractions. You can see whether vehicles are moving.
Now, we've printed out some images from Google Earth, and I'm looking at a shot of Australia's Bondi Beach, which is, I guess, not of strategic interest, but Google Earth contends that you can just about read the brand names, the designer labels on the bikinis.
Well, I don't know about that.
Their eyesight's better than mine, yeah.
No, I mean, you can see individual people, but you can't identify them because you're looking at the tops of their heads, and that makes it a little more difficult to figure out who they are. You can see people, but not identify them.
Mm-hmm. But you can do things like follow the Tour de France. You can see the peloton from outer space.
Well, you can, but there are going to be limits to your ability to follow it because you're going to have to know where to point the camera. And that's one of the big advantages that the military has historically had is they have all of these additional sources of information that enable them to figure out where to point the camera.
Mm-hmm. And here's an email we have for Margaret in Little Rock, Arkansas. A lot depends on where you're looking. In a significant urban area, you can see individual vehicles in parking lots, sometimes distinguish pickup trucks from sedans. You can't tell exact models. Though I can tell which truck is mine in the lot where I work because it's a distinctive color and I park in the same general area most of the time in a rural area,
right.
You can
right.
barely distinguish individual houses.
That's about right. That's about right. With Google Earth, basically what they have done is they have attempted to populate their imagery archive with things they think that people are going to be interested in. If it's an urban area, people who live there are going to be interested in it. If it's out in the middle of nowhere, going to be less interested, lower resolution imagery.
Now, private satellite imagery, as opposed to these military satellites, I assume that they fall somewhere in between the best that the Pentagon can get and Google Earth.
Well, no, the private companies are that's where Google Earth is getting the imagery is
uh-huh.
from private satellite companies, different providers of different resolutions of imagery. No, Google is not independently acquiring the imagery; they're getting it from these commercial companies, two in the United States, one in Israel, one in France. The American companies are operating under government license, and so there are some restrictions on what they can acquire imagery of and how they can release it. So the Defense Department has already signed off on the public release of this imagery before Google's able to acquire
it. So they do have to clear it.
Well, they do in the sense that the Defense Department has final authority over whether the imagery can be released, and they're signing off on everything, so they have not objected to it.
So, for example, we read in the newspapers of Turkish troops gathering on the borders of Iraq. That might, just hypothetically, might not be available?
Thus far, they have not placed any restrictions on the imagery that's available. We thought that they were going to do it for the Iraq War. They didn't. They were practicing checkbook control during the Afghanistan War because they were first in line. You could order imagery from the commercial companies. You just knew that you weren't going to get it anytime soon because all the time on the satellites was already spoken for.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Steve. Steve's calling us from the East Bay in California.
Hi, how's it going?
All right.
Well, you know, I'd like to join the conversation. Maybe not so much on a military standpoint, but I use these online satellite services to find empty swimming pools and backyards to skateboard in.
Really?
Yeah, it's a lot more fun than looking at pictures of burned out villages and stuff.
And this is a reliable source?
For the most part, it is. Sometimes I'll show up to what looks like a perfect right hand kidney shaped pool and. Maybe it'll be filled in with dirt and, scummy water. But I've found about a good, 4 to 6 empty swimming pools this summer in abandoned houses and just had my own little private skate park sessions going.
Well, talk about innovation.
This is a new one for me. But I think that points to one of the challenges that you have operating with this imagery is that you don't know what the date on it was. And that's one of the critical things with military imagery is that you know exactly when it was acquired.
Steve, good luck.
Yeah, thanks.
So long.
Happy hunting.
Let's talk with Nell. And Nell's with us from China Grove. Is that in North Carolina?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, please.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
This past weekend, my brother came to visit, younger brother, the youngest child in the family came to visit, and we were talking about the home where Dad grew up, and I finally was able to just pull it up on Google, and I said, see, he really did have to walk uphill both ways to go barefoot in the winter.
And he liked it.
Yeah, he thought it was great. It's in a real rural area of western Kentucky. You could see the stream that he played in, the pond that I fished in, and it was great. But like your guest said, the resolution was a little less because it is so far out.
Mm-hmm.
It was really great to show him the mountain and the school and everything where Dad lived and played.
Hmm. Well, thanks very much for the call, Nell.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Beyond the private uses like that, the availability of satellite imagery, would you think that countries that can't afford to put their own satellites into space for their own purposes would be using these images?
Well, they would certainly be acquiring it commercially through one of the commercial companies. I don't think that they're going to be spending very much time surfing on Google, again, because you don't know when the image was acquired and you only have one of them. It's having the date that the image was acquired, having multiple so that you can see whether things are moving, having imagery that you can precisely measure is the reason that you'd be paying a commercial company thousands of dollars for new imagery rather than just looking at Google. But this enables you to understand the sorts of things that military photo interpreters are looking for to understand how that process works. So I think it has improved public understanding of the intelligence community.
It's also being used for advocacy. I mean, we mentioned the destroyed villages in Darfur. Yet photo interpretation, the interpretation of these images, this is an art as well as a science.
Well, it's a discipline that the military intelligence community has spent a long time training people to do. One of the big challenges with this type of imagery is finding things that it's readily understandable what you're looking at and doesn't require any great leap of imagination. It doesn't you're not dependent on somebody else captioning it. In the case of the Chinese nuclear submarine, well, that was pretty straightforward. In the case of Darfur, frankly, I've been very frustrated that the satellite imagery has not had the sort of impact on the public imagination that we had hoped it would in the past.
Let's get another caller on that. It's also, as you look at these images, you can say, ooh, that's a destroyed village. It doesn't tell you who destroyed it or when.
Well, and you have to understand what it is you're looking for to understand the difference between the intact village and the destroyed village. The nuclear submarine requires a little less interpretation.
Let's get Mitchell on the line, and Mitchell's with us from Tucson, Arizona.
Yes, it's Michelle.
Oh, Michelle, excuse me. I apologize.
My husband and I, for the last 20 years, have flown high-performance racing gliders, and these are actual airplanes with 15 to 20-meter length wings that have no engines. And we use Google Earth all the time, and as a matter of fact, we just got back from a contest in southern Utah, And with all the forest fires, we were able to look at Google Earth with some of the newer images and find the canyons that they were talking about in the reports. And, of course, we use Google Earth to look for cliff formations, slot canyons, anything that will give us lift to keep our airplanes in the air.
But it's obviously you're looking for formations. It's not going to tell you what the weather is like there today.
No, no, absolutely not. But then we have the satellite weather reports that we get online along with the Google satellite images.
Yes. And these are things that 30 or 40 years ago, the military was paying billions of dollars a year to be able to do.
Well, it's certainly made the sport of racing gliders so much easier for the contest organizers and to make sure that we develop a safe contest route for all of our gliders to go.
Well, another innovative use. Thanks very much, Michelle, and I apologize for getting your name wrong.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
And again, looking at some of these images we got from Google Earth, you do get, there's an image of what, at least according to my inexpert eye, looks like a World War II British Lancaster bomber that's in the air flying over Huntington, England.
No, that's one of the fun things about the satellite imagery is that you do find these little Easter eggs every now and again, that you will find airplanes landing at airports or you'll find things that are completely out of place. That's you're not always going to find that, but when you do find them, they're always a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. And how we're hearing from people, obviously, whose lives, I guess, are being changed if you count finding empty swimming pools for skateboarding. But, you know, clearly this is going to be there are all kinds of applications nobody's ever thought about.
Well, it was the absence of the availability of the imagery, okay? I mean, if you did not have this solution floating around, you had a lot of problems you didn't even know that you had. But now that this sort of imagery is available, readily available, and through the keyhole software that's the interface, you can interface with the imagery easily. And I think that that's one of the important elements here is not simply the availability of the imagery, but the ease with which you can interface with it. Because when we started doing commercial satellite imagery over a decade ago, you had to have a medium-sized computer workstation. It required thousands of dollars of software. I sat in a three-day-long class learning the buttonology of how to use the software, and I can tell you that this is an awful lot easier to use than that stuff was a decade ago.
No, I remember also the first time I remember this coming up in a news context was Chernobyl, the spot images of the plume from the Chernobyl nuclear power plant in Ukraine.
Well, that's right. I mean, and at that point, you know, if you think about the granularity of those images, well, if you squinted at it really hard, you could barely see the reactors, you could barely see the lake. And in that case, you know, you were dealing with images where each dot was going to be, I forget what it was, it was like a dozen feet on a side, a couple of dozen feet on a side, and now we're going to something where the dots are only a few feet across. And back then, the imagery was good enough to see airports. Now you can identify airplanes. It's come a very long way.
John Pike, thanks very much.
Thank you.
John Pike is the director of globalsecurity.org, a pioneer in the public use of satellite imagery. He joined us today here in Studio 3A. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.